Welcome to Florida.
That is the voice of best-selling author and award-winning environmental reporter Craig Pittman. My name is Chad Scott, and this is the Welcome to Florida podcast. I wanted to thank everybody before we get started as we record our episode on the Villages. I think that was episode 4, is over 1,000 listens from a variety of sources, all the people listening on iTunes and Google Podcast and Spotify and wherever else you can find it. And hopefully one day that will be the standard of listenership for our episodes, but it is not now. And I wanted to thank everybody and tell you, Craig, that I continue to get a great deal of feedback about that episode.
And I think it surprised both of us with how deep it went.
Are you a sports fan at all, Craig?
I like baseball.
Okay.
That's about it.
Gotcha.
I have to tell you, my wife is a big fan of lots of sports. She likes football, baseball, basketball, tennis.
Oh, that's an interesting dynamic. The wife is the bigger sports fan than the husband. Okay. Now, do you go to Rays games down where you live very often? Or did you? Obviously not anymore.
Yeah, we have. I live about 5 minutes from where they play. I have to say, I'm a longtime Red Sox fan. My wife is a longtime Yankees fan.
Oh, boy.
So we're raising the kids as Rays fans is the only possible compromise.
Very good solution. Good solution. I mention this because the Southeastern Athletic Conference of the NCAA, of course, college football, which is huge across the state of Florida, announced recently that its conference teams, of which Florida is a member, will be playing only league games this year. And that means no Florida State football game for the first time since 1957. My day job is at the sports radio station in Jacksonville, 1010XL, where I am the program director. And I would say about the time I was 16 until 35, 40, sports was the overriding passion of my life, particularly college football. It was one of the big reasons I decided to leave Wisconsin, where I was born and raised, to attend Auburn University and then stay in the South and work in sports throughout my entire career. I'm not as big a sports fan anymore, but losing that game for so many people in this state is a big deal. The Big Ten, schools like Michigan and Ohio State, have decided to cancel their fall seasons, along with the Pac-12, schools like UCLA and Stanford. The Southeastern Conference, Florida, will move forward, as will the Atlantic Coast Conference, Florida State, for now. So with any luck, we will still get Florida State-Miami. We will still get Florida-Georgia in Jacksonville, those big rivalry games, but no Florida-Florida State this year. Now, in the Florida Phoenix recently, you wrote a story about water management districts, which seem about as interesting as watching paint dry on the surface, but they're actually incredibly important.
Yeah, I mean, the state has 5 water management districts. They've been there since the 70s, and they're in charge of dealing with everything involving water. You know, they issue permits for water use. They issue permits to fill in wetlands. They're in charge of flood protection. The one for South Florida is in charge of the state's half of Everglades restoration. Mm-hmm. So they're not well known, but they are important, and they do levy taxes on people to pay for the things that they build. The one for Southwest Florida, for instance, financed the construction of the Tampa desalination plant and the big 15-billion-gallon reservoir that Tampa Bay Water owns. And so the leaders of each one of these things are appointed by the governor, and Governor DeSantis has either chosen or forgotten about appointing a whole bunch of them. And so all but one of them have a lot of vacancies on the board. In fact, one of them, the St. Johns River Water Management District, they only have 4 out of their 9 members, and one of the 4, his term expired. So he gets to hang around for a couple of months after that, you know, in case they have a delay in appointment. But even that extended term ends at the end of this month. And so that means they don't have a quorum. They can't meet. They're supposed to be making budget and taxing decisions right now, and they can't.
If you talk about the states in the nation where water is the most important, seeing as how Florida's a peninsula, so water is on our every side, and all the demands of water for the health of the Everglades, combating the Everglades is all the big sugar agriculture south of Lake Okeechobee, all the springs, the Florida aquifer. I can't imagine a state where water issues are more important than Florida, and these incredibly important bodies who are doing this work behind the scenes, to have them left vacant essentially is bizarre, to say the least.
Yeah. Well, one guy I talked to, he said it's either incompetence or a strategy, and if it's a strategy, I can't figure out what it is. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
In your FloridaPhoenix.com article, you have a passage here that I'm going to read that I just found shocking. You talk about the authority of these management districts, and part of that is permitting. And reading from Craig's article, FloridaPhoenix.com, the Suwannee River Water Management District is scheduled to decide whether to allow a company called Seven Springs to pump 1.15 million gallons of water a day out of the aquifer and sell it to Nestle to be bottled. That figure, I cannot wrap my head around. 1.15 million gallons a day just to bottle it as water and sell it in Walmart under Nestle's. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
And they don't have to, pay the state, you know, a per gallon price or anything. The bottlers just take the water and repackage it, and then and then they make pure profit for them, and Florida doesn't get a dime out of that.
So that permitting decision, if there's no financial incentive to it, why would anyone vote for it?
Because they like the jobs that are available from it.
The bottling jobs? I mean, how many jobs are we talking about to bottle that amount of water?
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's the company that owns the spring, Seven Springs, they make money off of it. And Nestle makes money. And, you know, Nestle has a crew there working, you know, for the bottling. Listen, we could do a whole show on Florida water. It's got that many different angles and aspects to it, and this is just one of them.
Yeah, incredible. And it's something that, you know, is hard to keep an eye on because these boards are not particularly sexy. But what goes on?
No, they're not.
You know, with Lake Okeechobee is sexy, and Red Tide is sexy, and algae blooms are sexy, and the Everglades are sexy. So, and these are the bodies who determine that sort of policy. And I guess when you really go up the food chain, these do become incredibly important governing bodies. A quick follow-up. Since the recording of this episode, the Suwannee River Water Management District voted 5-1 to table the Nestle permit. This decision made over concerns that the process was not transparent enough with virtual-only meetings. All right, Craig, you also, as we begin to transition into nudists, for the Washington Post...
Wait, let me unbutton my
shirt.
Go ahead.
Yes, get comfortable, everybody. You wrote for the Washington Post earlier this summer about how nudists are dealing with COVID-19 and social distancing and everything the rest of us are going through. Summarize what you found, and then we'll go ahead and talk to Eric Shutoff of the American Association for Nude Recreation.
It had just occurred to me to wonder, you know, how are Florida's nudist resorts dealing with this pandemic crisis? I mean, a lot of it involves putting on coverings, which is sort of in the antithesis of what they do. They tend to take them off. I knew, and we'll talk to Eric about this, I knew that Florida has more nudist resorts than any other state. So, you know, that meant if the problem's a problem for the industry, it's a bigger problem in Florida than anywhere else. So I talked to Eric. I talked to people at other nudist resorts. I talked to some of the people who live in these nudist resorts, some of whom have been there for dozens of years, about how it was impacting things. And my particular favorite was something from the Caliente nudist resort in Pasco County. Pasco County, which, by the way, has more nudist resorts than anywhere else in Florida. So they really are the nudist capital of America. The Caliente resort had put out a notice saying, you know, we know a lot of our residents like to greet each other with a hug or a kiss, and we're asking you, please don't do that for now. Instead, we suggest you employ the butt bump.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Which will not only be more sanitary, but also help you practice your moves on the dance floor. And my editor said, you can't just leave that quote standing. You have to talk to some epidemiology people about that. So I did, and they both said, yeah, don't do that either.
I would imagine that's not, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we can leave that there and maybe pick it up with Eric. Pasco County, between the nudism this week and the rattlesnake roundup, Pasco County, just north of Tampa, seems to make it into about every single episode we do. Maybe our first live
it's
show.
It's ground zero.
Yeah.
It's ground zero for Weird Man. It really is. I mean, the Mafia had a place there. That was in the movie Donnie Brasco, a place called King's Court. The Klan actually tried to adopt a highway in Pasco County. And when people objected, they're like, no, no, we won't wear our sheets. We'll wear the regular orange vest. We promise it'll be okay.
That's nice. That's nice.
A group of Wiccans who were living there got into a shootout with their neighbors because their neighbors thought they were Satan worshipers. It's a happening place, man. And, of course, it's the place where two mayors within 20 days of each other got arrested in Port Richey.
Pasco County. According to research from the American Association for Nude Recreation, 2.2 million nudists visit Florida annually, contributing $7 billion to the economy. And with that, let's welcome Eric Shutoff of the American Association for Nude Recreation.
This is going to sound facetious, but it's not. Are you currently dressed?
Yes, I am. We work out of an office here in Kissimmee, Florida. And we have everything from the post office to, you know, coming to drop off mail to folks that clean the building and everything else. So the answer is yes. In the workaday world, I have a shirt and tie. But on the weekends, it's a whole different story. And it's a chance to go out and enjoy a lot of life clothes free. I love what I get to do, not only promoting nude recreation, but getting to visit many of the clubs, the resorts, the nude beaches.
Where did you come from originally?
I'm originally from Massachusetts, south of Boston.
What attracted you to Florida then?
Actually, what happened, I got out of law school, and at the time, Florida was doing a lot of hiring because there was an awful lot of growth in business. After I came to Florida, well, of course, who would want to leave the beautiful temperature that there is here? And yes, my family and I were involved in nude recreation pretty much from the time that we moved to Florida. There were some advertisements in the paper about area clubs, and I studied for the bar exam while going to clubs. And, you know, it was a great way to relax and try to de-stress before a very serious exam. It worked out well for me. And then I practiced law for quite a while and still do, but also work for the association.
You're in Kissimmee. What's the name of the resort that you're in there?
The name of the resort that is here is Cypress Cove, and it's up on Pleasant Hill Road in Kissimmee, and it's been a nudist club since, I think, 1964.
Wow.
I don't live at the Cove, but I do spend quite a bit of time there, and other folks in our office live at Cypress Cove. There are ones. It's a beautiful resort that has several swimming pools, tennis courts, an awesome beach, and restaurants, and a great couple of sports bars, although some of those have, of course, been changed their operating hours and everything, along with other restaurant and resort business with the whole COVID situation.
What appeals to you about the lifestyle?
Well, I'll tell you what I think is the biggest draw for people. You know, when I talk to them, you know, how did you get involved in nude recreation or why, and what it is for me. And that is, if you have a regular job, 9 to 5 as you do, or maybe longer, you know this phenomenon is if you go on vacation, even to a very nice place, let's say you're going to spend a week's vacation, you fly out on Sunday, it often takes by Wednesday or Thursday before you really get into vacation mode and relax. Part of you is still back at the office or on the plane that you came in on mentally. But when you go to a nudist club for a vacation or a stay and you take off all of the clothes that tie you to the workaday world, you move into relaxation mode just a lot faster. It's a phenomenon that in different ways a lot of people describe. It is just you step into a different world, frankly, and it's like going barefoot all over. When we got started, my wife and I, it was definitely an antidote to the short vacation. You have a high-stress law job, and you're able to get away for a few days at a nudist resort, and you get a week's vacation out of just a few days because of that instant relaxation.
So it's more mental than anything else, really.
A lot of it is, and that's what every person's experience is different, of course, what they like. There's some other things to like about it. It's a great equalizer. I mean, you don't know a bank president from a bus driver, so you meet a lot of great people. And there's not a lot to pack, which is nice. But I think the mental part, just being able to relax and do so more quickly, is what a lot of our members express that they enjoy.
The one you're at there, it's not the oldest. Is Lake Como in Pasco the oldest one in Florida?
Well, now when you ask in Florida, I don't know offhand. Lake Como, I believe, does trace back to at least the 1940s, if not sooner.
Yeah,
and so
I think 41.
Yeah, it was here before Cyprus, to answer your question. We do have some clubs, interestingly enough, all the way west of the Mississippi in the far west and northwest, who traced their origins to the early 1930s, as do some clubs in New Jersey. Originally, this association was known as the American Sunbathing Association, and in the early 1930s, some of the clubs up in New Jersey area formed. Nudism really started in Europe, and it came to American shores in the late 1920s, early 1930s. One of the things that I really like about Como is if you play tennis, and I'm not great at the sport, but I do, they have the actual clay court like you would play on a professional tennis court, the ones that are groomed with real clay court, which I had never actually played tennis on before. They have a beautiful lake, as the name implies. And they've done an awful lot with the amenities at that club within the last 5 years. They have some great brand new rental cabins, cottages. If you're going for a stay for a week, they're an ideal place to stay. And they also accommodate travel trailers, campers. And they also have some people are homeowners at the club. And that is over in Pasco County.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Pasco has more resorts than anywhere else in the state.
It does. It has a lot of nudist clubs, and in part, again, thanks to Lake Como, which was kind of a pioneer in that area. But there are a number of clubs, resorts, and even housing additions where there are homeowners that got together and said, we want to live in a small community that actually has, we can go to our backyard and enjoy the backyard. In a fence park, yeah,
with the very high
fence. Also enjoying the fence. Yeah, there's a lot of all of those things. There's very small clubs, and there are very large ones. Pasco has, you can check AANR.com for a full listing, but it has a number of them.
You mentioned sports like tennis, and Craig's Washington Post article mentioned volleyball. Are support garments allowed when playing sports? Does that fit into the nudist code as being okay just when you're playing sports? Because it would seem without them, you could run into some trouble, both men and women.
Well, it's a good question. And of course, what we often say is we shed clothes, but we don't shed common sense. So obviously, if you're cooking, an apron is in order, for example, right? If you're certain sports, where it is helpful to have certain support wear, then yes, nudists would wear something for comfort or for a safety in the case of, like I say, cooking. We are going to do that, and we are always going to bring a towel, as we say, no matter where we go, because that's basic courtesy, too, to sit on a towel.
By going unclothed, do you think that encourages people to focus more on trying to stay healthy and stay fit and stay active?
I definitely think that whatever age of life you are, whether you're, 18 or 80, first of all, not having clothes and being encumbered by them does encourage you to get out for a walk or to just enjoy the fresh air or a sport or whatever. There is a lot to do, and that's the other part of it, is that typically clubs are organized around some kind of recreation, the swimming pool, the volleyball net. Another big popular sport now is called pickleball, which is like tennis, but it's designed for those who perhaps maybe can't have the full stress of a tennis match anymore. So it's a smaller court, and it's very popular with retirees, semi-retirees. There are golf courses. Cypress Cove has a small chip and putt golf course. It's nine holes, for example. And then there are special events as well, everything from antique car shows. There are nude running races series.
I was going to ask you about the whitetail race? Is that what it's called? Some of them?
I think there may be one. There are quite a few in nude running series from coast to coast. And some of those are officially sanctioned events where, ranked runners go. And again, it's a chance to do something a little bit different, but it also is enjoyable.
The Florida weather is obviously conducive to nudism, but Arizona has sunny weather, California sunny weather, Texas sunny weather. How did Florida become such a hub for nudism?
Well, I do think that weather played a large role, but you already mentioned, too, some of the early clubs that were pioneers in this area that maybe develop this club sooner than in some of the states that you've mentioned might be a reason that Florida was early adopter of nude recreation. Also, some of the leaders of the nude recreation industry, and I really say it as an industry because it developed into its own tourist niche, came out of Florida. Some very talented people. The folks who started Cypress Cove in the early 60s and the people who started Como, they were more than club organizers. They were leaders in the industry, and I think that that also led to promotion and understanding. The industry has grown. In Florida alone, it contributes several billions with a B to Florida's economy, both in people traveling into the state to go to nude beaches, because there are several official nude beaches within the state of Florida. There's also all these clubs that are here. There are nude cruises that depart from ports like Canaveral each year, and they take thousands of passengers out. My wife and I had a great experience about a year ago on the Bare Necessities Tour and Tower Cruise, and it left from Port Canaveral.
You mentioned about the wide variety of people it appeals to, but aren't there some resorts that cater more to the high-end nudists as opposed to the folks who are going for sort of the blue-collar?
You're absolutely right, and that's what I love about the industry, because when someone says, what is a nudist club like, adjectives like friendly come to mind, and adjectives like lots to do come to mind. But after that, they're really different. And some are a great place for a camping experience, a more rustic, bring your tent. Those tend to be more economical as well. And so there are clubs where you come and basically pack your own picnic lunch, all the way up to those that have full-fledged spa services and have gourmet dining. And so those are all available in the spectrum of resorts. And fortunately, in Florida, you've got a little bit of both. A place like Cypress Cove, for example, has fine dining, and the hotel accommodations are really first class. On the other hand, there are places that are north getting toward the Georgia-Florida border where if you basically want rustic camping and you just want to spend a few days out where you really touch nature, you can enjoy that. When you're in your birthday suit, there's something about taking a walk, taking a hike down a path or whatever that's just a little bit different. It's a little bit closer to nature and the way our Creator made us than it is when you're wearing something.
You talk about getting out into nature, and Florida's got a lot of sunshine, which is great for nudists, but it also has a lot of bugs, which I can't imagine is great. Is the solution for mosquitoes and ticks and spiders and everything else you'd come across on a nature walk in Florida without any clothes just bug spray?
Well, that certainly is a big part of it, right, is being prepared with sunscreen and sunblock in the case of that Florida sun you're talking about, and also know when to come out of the sun or to come in when you before dusk hours, you know, using common sense. It's the same things that you would have if you were wearing shorts, except you don't have to have the shorts.
I was going to ask you about another potential health hazard. I understand there's a resort that's run by an organization called the Bear Buns Biker Club. Every time I read that, I go, they got to have a problem with chafing, I would think.
Well, actually, I'm a bit familiar with the organization you're saying, and some of the people who started Bear Buns Biker, by the way, are now in the resort business. There's a great club up where Interstate 75 meets Interstate 10, about that location in White Springs, Florida, that is called Suwannee Valley. And mm-hmm. It was started by some of the original Bear Buns Biker folks. And what they would do to get back to your question, they would typically wear, obviously, the appropriate clothing to ride and drive a motorcycle, right? But what they would do is go visit a number of clubs in their itinerary and travels. And so, and it is a little bit easier to have large groups because you don't have full-size automobiles or RVs. You're able to have more folks travel to clubs. And so what happens, the folks who started Bear Buns took the best of what they learned in visiting clubs in Florida, but actually in other states as well, and they took that information and said, let's start a club of our own. So there is Bear Buns Bikers, but there also is Suwannee Valley Resort, which has a lot of the leadership talent that started that club.
What are the common misconceptions you hear about nudists from the public?
The first thing I'll say is this before I answer is that often when people have questions or perceptions about what would I find at a nudist resort or what would there be there, there's a lot of questions that people have about a first visit or what would it be like. And we try to address some of those questions that people would have about their first visit on ANR.com, A-A-N-R.com, so that we can address some of these either perceptions or folks are unsure, what would I expect during my first visit, you know? So, for example, there are some common questions. Folks have the question, well, am I likely to encounter someone with a camera? And the answer is, we're good neighbors, so there are policies in clubs with respect to photography, for example. And when it does happen, it is in some very clearly designated areas under circumstances where a person, no one would appear who doesn't want to be, for example, and some clubs prohibit it altogether. But some folks wonder, would my image ever be taken? And there's some clear answers to that. There are answers to first-time etiquette. Some clubs encourage pets. Some ask them to be left at home, so every club is different. But what we always do is we ask that you call the club ahead of time to find out availability and to make sure that if you're looking for example, music that goes on in the morning, that you're calling the club and finding out, is that indeed the environment or atmosphere? Are you looking for a place that's a quiet stay to have a hammock and read a good book? And every club is different, so we do ask them that you contact the club ahead of time and do check their website for policies. What folks do think is that somehow it is going to be different than the typical travel experience that would be a resort or hotel, and often folks are surprised to see how much of a typical vacation it is like, the only difference being that we're not wearing clothes.
This may be a misconception, but I have heard several rumors that, and I'm not going to mention the specific name, but that at one resort, there became a split in the people who live there according to what they wanted out of it. And then on one side, you had the naturists, the people who were very into nude recreation and only nude recreation, and other folks who were into swinging and thought that that was the purpose of the club, that they were there to pick new partners. Is that something that has happened at more than one place?
Well, here's what I can tell you from my own experience, my own family's experience, is that the AANR has been around since 1931 and kind of honed its principles and standards and operating policies, procedures, and everything else from 90 years of experience. And what an AANR club will offer you is a wholesome experience that is affirming, that is, as we're talking about, back to nature. And that is for all the reasons that we talked about, getting back into nature, that is getting to enjoy body acceptance and also athletics and the sports and all the things we talked about. And that is what an AANR club offers. It's harder for me to speak to a club that is not AANR because there are, but that is one of the advantages of coming to ANR.com, organizations that have built their standards, their principles, and their guest experience around behavior that would require no apology.
Before we go, I just wanted to ask one more question. This is a frivolous question, but I feel like I have to ask it. Do you think nudists have a greater tolerance for nudity-related puns than normal people?
Here's the thing, right? I will say, I love it about this job, being executive director for nude recreation, most of the time, is you do have to have a little bit of not taking any of life too seriously. And at the same time, you know, we're serious business. It's a several billion-dollar a year industry to Florida alone. But we don't take ourselves too serious in the sense that we understand that certainly for somebody new, there may be an awkward moment or two, but it won't be for long. Once you're at a club, you'll quickly adapt to it. But we do know there are questions that people have, and occasionally, yes, there's a little bit of humor. And we do have some catchphrases in addition to using puns, but, you know, we do say pack less and relax more. We say wear nothing but a smile because that's what we do. Although now we have to say wear nothing except your mask. Watch where the tan lines are, right? Because they're going to be in a different place. And we get it. But see, that's what we've been able to do, is to say have a little bit of humor about life.
I think as a public service, I think you have to tell our listeners, where are the nude beaches in Florida?
Okay, well, there are several. And again, you get information at AANR.com as well.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where the main ones are. On the East Coast in Brevard County, the Canaveral National Seashore, and some of Volusia County also, Playlinda Parking Lots 13 area of the Canaveral National Seashore has signage explaining that there are nude sunbathers that may be present, and that is on the Canaveral National Seashore. Keep in mind that the availability of all of these beaches is subject to current conditions of whether beaches
sure.
are open or closed. A new one that has just been adopted by St. Lucie County is in St. Lucie County, called Blind Creek Beach. It's a neat beach that has been growing in popularity. It had had a pretty strong following before, but now there is signage so that people know the appropriate places to be and where to park. And then we have Hallover Beach, which is one of the most famous beaches,
yeah.
and that is in Miami.
Yeah, that's the one I knew about.
Yeah, that is down in the Sunny Isles area of Miami. It has been there for a number of years. Were started by some really great pioneers who took the steps to make sure that there would be things like picnic areas and trash pickup and the things that you expect at any kind of a beach that you would enjoy. And they have all of those things and have done things very well for a long time. And that is in North Miami. Those are the four most well-known. If somebody calls 1-800-TRY, that's T-R-Y, Nude, N-U-D-E. Our staff can also provide directions over the phone if that's, you know, somebody's traveling that way.
Yeah. There are none on the Gulf Coast or up in the Panhandle? It's all strictly on the
Atlantic. Well, there are some that have a history in the Panhandle. They're a little bit less formalized. So what we try to do is steer folks toward those where there's a sign of assurance in the ground that says this is beyond this point where the sunbathers will be. So there are some places, other locations. Let's face it, it's Florida. It's a great state with lots
yeah.
of sunshine. But in terms of official information, we try to give you so that your first-time experience is going to be in a location where you know where the nudity begins and ends, because we want to be good neighbors. They want to know they can enjoy nudity comfortably and without giving offense.
Eric, thank you so much for your time.
This has been great. Thanks, Eric.
Good talking to both of you.
I should mention, by the way, that there, you know, we talked about Pasco County, and he mentioned this, and I meant to get back to it, that there are areas around the nudist resorts where people who like to visit those resorts have bought houses. They don't
yeah.
have to live on the resort property, but they can live near it so they can visit a lot. And in fact, there's so much of that kind of activity in Pasco County that there actually is a real estate agent who specializes
wow.
in nude clients and wound up with her own TV show on the TLC network called Buying Naked. I don't
never
think it won
one.
Any Emmys,
yeah.
but
well.
I thought it should have won an Emmy for its editing.
yeah.
You could see the clients, but you couldn't see
yeah.
all the clients, if you know what I mean.
yeah. I could see the attraction in nude sunbathing a lot more than I can in hiking through Saw Palmetto or Bayonet Palm nude.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, the whole thing with sand spurs and,
yeah,
and mosquitoes and everything else.
That doesn't appeal to me in the
yeah.
least. But if you had a great beach and everyone else and it's adults and, yeah, I would be
maybe
open to that.
Maybe they figure there's strength in numbers and the mosquitoes can't get all of you.
well, some parts of the state,
go
I'll bet
the
they
big
could.
Guy over there.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Welcome to Florida.